And up next, we're going to take your phone calls with Robert Felix as we talk about the coming ice age. What do you think? What do you believe, huh? Check in with us. And welcome back, George Norrie with you, along with Robert Felix, not by fire, but by ice. I've been saying that for about 15, 20 years now, haven't I, Robert?
You have.
And how has it sold?
Pardon me?
How has it sold over the years?
It has done well. You know, it's a science book, so it's none of these. It's not a million seller or anything like that. I think probably 14,000 copies, something like that.
That's pretty good. Book business is tough. It's not that easy anymore, unless you're.
No, it's you know, I was looking at being an overnight success, and 20 whatever years is not quite overnight. But I've been enjoying it. And I still believe in it.
What are you working on next?
I'm not.
You're just taking it easy?
Well, sort of, you know, but well, where I live, I needed a new shed. And so I've been out there building that and laying brick walkways and just and keeping the website up. I do post something every single day. Whether I'm on vacation, wherever I am, I have been posting something every day since 1997.
How do you like Texas?
I like it so far.
It's a great state.
I like it.
Big state.
Oh, it's huge. It just, I looked at a map before we came, and you look on a map in Fort Worth and Dallas, look like they are, you know, they're right close together. And, you know, there's 6 million people there between the two of them. But they're like 45, when you drive, you realize they're 45 miles apart.
It's a 40-minute drive, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
Easy. Let's take some calls here for you. They're lining up. Let's pick it up by going to Joe in Long Island, New York. Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Robin. You know, if you look at animal behavior, that wall of water that hit Indonesia, several hundred thousand people were victimized by it, but at the same time, the animals knew enough to hit the high ground. They must have been something they picked up. Yet the humans did not, in most cases, pick that up where you would guess they should have. So I wonder if animals are changing their behavior, whether it be birds or reindeer herds or some of the sea creatures in relation to potential, you know, movements towards an ice age. And then have you studied Greenland and the Gulf Stream, both of which were depicted in that movie, The Day After Tomorrow?
Where do I start with that? Let's see. I do have one chapter in my book where I deal with crazy snakes.
Crazy snakes.
Earthquake lights and crazy snakes. Now, this is, I haven't seen it yet, but there was a earthquakes. This was back, I think, in Tangshan, China, but it was in February, and nobody knew there was an earthquake coming, but then snakes started crawling out of the ground. That was in February, so they crawled out of the ground and froze to death. But I guess they figured that was better than being ground up into snake burger, because then there was a huge earthquake. So somehow those snakes knew that there was an earthquake coming. I don't see any snakes crawling out of the ground now any more than usual.
But, sounds biblical.
But yeah, you know, there's we're going to see things that happen, I think, as the magnetic field drops that... and I don't think any of us alive, you know what that's going to be. But I think we will be seeing changes. And what was the second part
about Greenland?
Greenland. I really haven't studied that much. I know that the Greenland ice sheet, I believe the Greenland ice sheet is growing right now, even though a lot of people don't think so. And certainly the Gulf current will change, because right now the Gulf current is keeping, you know, England is farther north than Maine, but it's a lot warmer. because the Gulf current is keeping it warmer. But as near as I can tell, during an ice age, that Gulf current changes, because during the last ice age, most of the United Kingdom was covered with ice.
What's going on in the South Pole, Antarctica?
As far as I know, ice sheets are still growing there. So you hear about the melting Arctic ice, but nobody talks about the ice sheets growing in Antarctica. Now, Antarctica, it's huge, and Antarctica contains 90% of the world's ice. So when the ice sheets are growing in Antarctica, that's a big deal.
Let's go next to Ryan, driving through Yellowstone National Park on the wild card line. Hello, Ryan. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi. Hi, Robert. So, anyway, I was going to mention what you just did about Antarctica and whatnot. I was curious, Antarctica is also getting colder. That's a question that you haven't touched on quite yet. And then, as you say, the undersea volcanoes, cause the oceans to be warmer, and then you get more evaporation, yet not necessarily, it's cooler over the continents, and then you get the condensation, and then it's sort of the combination of the two where you get the ice, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, because, as near as I can tell, during previous ice ages, as we headed into ice ages, the above water volcanoes, volcanic activity increased at the same time as the underwater volcanic activity increased. So exactly what you said, the warmer oceans send more evaporation into the sky, and then the colder skies over the continents have that precipitation fall as snow. And so that's how you get an ice age. It's that snow, and it's a lot of snow. I mean, you're talking like five stories of snow probably every year for hundreds of years, because it takes 100 feet of snow to compress into 1 foot of ice. So in order to get those ice sheets over Canada that were 2 miles thick, you got to have a devil of a lot of snow falling.
What's going on with the possibility of all these hurricanes and tropical storms? Is that caused because of the climate change?
No, I don't think so. You know, five storms, they're saying five tropical storms in the Atlantic hasn't happened since 1971. Well, unfortunately for those who try to blame that on global warming, 1971 was during a period of colder climate. So they don't correlate.
Mitchell, in your neck of the woods, your old neck of the woods in Seattle, welcome to the program. Hi, Mitch. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for taking my call, George.
Thank you.
I have always been fascinated by the way that the continents fit together like a puzzle.
Continental divide. They were all connected at one time.
Yeah, exactly. It's the continental trench, Mid-Atlantic Trench.
Yes.
But the thing is trippy. I see the Hudson's Bay as being a pass point of the North Pole, and I see, you know what I mean? And it's like it starts to click together. But these things obviously are real, and I just wonder how obviously the mechanism is not totally understood. But when I was a kid, they used to tell me that it was a tectonic plate theory, right?
Yes.
And it just looked so obvious on the map that it didn't make sense that it was, anyway, so it turns out that it was a fact. And so things have been changing for a long time, and just, I don't know what the new phase is. Is it going to be, is the pole going to move into some different position that might be predictable, And that's the thing I wanted to talk to you about.
Right. Is it predictable, Robert?
Well, I don't think the North Pole itself is going to move. I just think the magnetic North Pole is going to move, but tectonic plate movement is certainly predictable, because most tectonic plates, you know, the you were talking about the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, and at one time, millions and millions of millions of years ago, United States, you know, America was connected to South Africa, to Africa rather, and then it started. They know that there's a kind of plant called the Glossopteris plant that they have found in Africa, and they have found on the east coast of the United States, and it has. Anyway, they found that in both places, and they discovered that those continents are moving apart, but they only move apart, it is predictable, but it's only about 3/4 of an inch a year. It's about, they say it's about as fast as a fingernail grows. So my theory is that is driven by electromagnetic forces, which I don't think that will ever be proven in my lifetime, but that's what I think is proving is sending them apart. There are other tectonic plates that are moving faster. Of course, there's in California, I think it was during the 1880s that the George, tell me what the name of that. That is in California, where the earthquakes send them apart. But
the continental divide, you mean?
Parts of the land that you can fly over it, and you can see where the land jumped, where the rivers would come down the mountains, and then the land jumped. The rivers and streams will take a very sharp 90-degree turn for about 20 feet and then go straight again. So if you had a building built on one of those faults, the San Andreas Fault is what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay, sure.
It takes me a long time to remember it. But, parts of that in the late 1880s jumped 20 feet in one earthquake. So that would destroy a lot. So a lot of this happens is this tectonic movement. One plate will push against another plate and push and push and push, and nothing happens because they're just locked together. But when they do finally release, then they take a giant jump.
How about the New Madrid Fault earthquake that was so big it reversed the direction of the Mississippi River?
It did. Well, I mentioned this in the book, but there's a lake there, Real Foot Lake, spelled R-E-E-L, Real Foot, that it wasn't there. And after the earthquake, all of a sudden there was a lake, as the water ran into it.
Just overnight, practically.
But, yeah, the New Madrid Fault, that earthquake was so strong that it rang church bells in Boston.
Jeez.
That's a pretty strong word.
That is. Let's go to Mayat in New York. Welcome to the program. Hi, Mayat.
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Robert, I'm intrigued by your fascinating work. I have a three-part question, and please let me hear your answers over the air. First of all, help us to get a clear understanding of the magnetic pole, which I understand has more recently moved significantly, changing airport maps and logistics, and also the difference between the other type of much more cataclysmic type of pole shift. The second part, some time ago, back in the day, a former defense secretary said that whoever controls the weather, and he used 2025 for the year, controls the planet. So, not verbatim, but basically something about controlling the weather. And George has had on Dean Whittington, I heard one of his radio programs earlier this week. He's got a lot of good information. We know aluminum and barium, et cetera, is coming into the atmosphere and the ground. In other words, what are your thoughts around manipulation and geoengineering? I've seen chemtrails even in Canada that was quite clear. The last part is, what's up with these fires in Siberia? And if you have my questions, I'll listen over the air. Thank you, George.
Okay, I'll put you on hold. Let's start with the magnetic poles again, these pole shifts.
Okay, well, thank you, Maya. Let's see if I can answer them at all. The North Pole movement, you know, yes, I think it's moved around 400 miles. But apparently, you know, I'd like to say that proves my theory that we're headed into a magnetic reversal. But my understanding is sometimes it moves back and sometimes it moves the other. So that's not the same as I'm talking about with the magnetic reversal, is that during a magnetic reversal, the Earth's magnetic field strength actually declines and declines and declines until it reaches about 15% of its regular strength, and then the field reverses. Well, when I wrote the book, magnetic field strength was declining at about 5% every 100 years. Now it is declining about 5% per decade, which is 10 times faster than when I wrote the book, which some scientists are saying that is evidence that we're headed for a magnetic reversal. The British Geological Survey agrees with that. They say that it looks like we're headed, that a magnetic reversal could be imminent. Their meaning of imminent may not be the same as mine. So I hope that explains that a little bit. It's the fact that the magnetic field strength is declining at the same time is what I see as the big problem.
Next one was chemtrails.
Yeah, whoever controls the weather controls the planet. I don't know. I know that a lot of people do think that the chemtrails are controlling the weather and the barium and everything. I do not. This is just my own thought, but I just don't think that humans have much effect on the weather, no matter how hard we try. You know, because I don't think humans are causing global warming, and I don't think humans are going to cause global cooling. I think the sun runs the whole thing, and that humans, I think we're like a fly on the back of an elephant. I don't think we do a thing.
And your thoughts about these fires?
And the fires, I'm not aware of the fires in Siberia. So I guess that one. Now, the fires in...
Let's talk about the fires here.
The fires here in California, I think they have, you know, as bad as they are, that's horrible, but I think they have... Yeah, I do think they're caused by humans, not by global warming. They're caused by humans because our California government, in my opinion, has not been managing them properly. You know, many years ago, I lived in Arizona, many, many years ago, and I had a cabin in the mountains, and we would drive up through the Apache Sitgreave Reservation, and the Apaches managed their forest. They would.
Well, that's forest management. We're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit more about that, Robert, and take final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Is there some form of life on Venus? Next hour, Seth Shostak joins us from SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, to talk about that. And welcome back. Our final segment with Robert Felix, author of Not by Fire, But by Ice. So Robert, you're talking about how Native Americans had better forestry management than we do.
Yes. Yeah. They. What I saw them do is they would sell some of the timber to timber companies,
mm-hmm.
and but they would have the timber companies go in and no clear cutting. They would just cut certain trees so that you could almost drive between the trees, and then they would have the timber companies. after they'd done that cutting, they would use their heavy equipment to shove all of the leftover branches and all of the undergrowth into piles. And then in the springtime, during the rainy season when the ground was wet, then the Indians would go in there and burn those piles so that it gets rid of all of that undergrowth that creates the big fires. So then when they'd have a fire, they'd still have the fires, but the fires wouldn't climb up to the crowns of the trees and wouldn't destroy the trees that were remaining. I think the Indians did an amazing job.
Let's go to the phones. Brian in Wisconsin, first-time caller. Hi, Brian. Thank you.
Hi, George. How are you doing?
Okay. Hope you are, too.
Yeah, great interview. Robert, I have a question about the magnetic fields. By the way, that's like the best explanation I've ever heard of the Earth's magnetic field.
Yeah, I agree with that, Brian. You're right.
That was really thorough. The way the magnetic poles affect the Van Allen belt is through those field lines that run between the poles, and the particles that are charged in the Van Allen belt travel back and forth along those field lines. I was wondering, this is the first part of my question, I was wondering if the huge amount of metal debris and the tens of thousands of satellites that are, if you've seen a NORAD map of it, encompass the Earth like a metal cocoon, if they're also maybe having an effect on the drag of the particles from the Van Allen belt on their natural cycle back and forth from the poles driven by the magnetic belts. That's my first question. My second one is, when the mini ice ages do occur from magnetic pole shifts, regardless of their cause, have you seen any correlations between those changes and an outbreak of disease or plague or pandemics, such as, you know, the first known documented mini ice age in Europe coincided with the Black Death? And that's my question.
All right, take that one first, Robert.
Okay, yeah, that one, yeah, the, what, in the 1200s, I think it was, but the Black Death did occur during a time of, I don't know that it was mini ice age, but I think it was at the beginning of the little ice age, at least. So, yeah, that would concern me as to what happens in the future. But right now, I don't see any evidence of that. At first, when this pandemic started, I thought maybe that is what we were looking at. But I don't think this pandemic becomes even 1% of what you're talking about.
Black Death started in 1353 and 46 and 53. 1346
okay.
And 53.
All right. And there were, I think, years. There were also some huge volcanic eruptions at that same time.
They say the deaths range from 75 to 200 million. How could they be off by so much? 75 wow. million and 200 million, that's a big difference.
That is. And I don't know the answer as to how many died, but I just heard about it, that it did happen during the beginning of the little ice.
His other question was all this debris that's in space. Does that have anything to do with any of this?
That other question is, he's gone above my pay grade, Brian. I don't know. I doubt that it has anything to do with it. I doubt that it's affecting it, but I don't know that.
He's.
I got a question for Brian, though. You're in Wisconsin. Do you... there's something called Eskers that I'd love to see someday in Wisconsin, where like snakes, debris from glaciers have dropped, and they have created these mini hills that are...
What do you want to see snakes for? You're into snakes, aren't you? Robert?
Pardon?
You're into snakes, aren't you?
I guess I am into snakes tonight. Well, these are Eskers, E-S-K-E-R-S, and I've never seen one, and I'd love to.
Interesting take on that. Next up, let's go to George in Corpus Christi, Texas. Hey, George, go ahead.
Hi, George. Gravity, electromagnetism, strong nuclear, weak nuclear. These are the four forces that Dr. Michio Kaku says runs the universe, the four fundamental forces.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty logical that these little shifts in the magnetic poles and then the total shift are caused by all four forces because of the gravity and all of the, you know, magnetism, strong nuclear, weak. So my question is, so I can let other people talk, sir, what is the difference between a small ice age and a gigantic ice age? I mean, it's happened over the millennia, but what is the difference if all these forces using all these forces? And I'll hang up, George, as usual, and take my call on the radio.
Thanks, George.
Thanks, George. I guess the difference would be just in the volume of ice. Is, for instance, I had mentioned during the Little Ice Age that the glaciers started advancing out of the Alps, and meaning they probably started advancing in many other places. But in the French Alps, they have records of that because the farmers had to petition for lower taxes. Their fields were covered with ice. But during a big ice, going to Canada, I don't know that I haven't heard of any ice advances in Canada during that time because there really weren't enough people there living there to know. But during a major ice age, all of Canada, during the last one, all of Canada was covered by 2 miles of ice.
2 miles high.
Thick. Two Jeez. Miles high.
Holy.
Yeah, and that ice extended all the way down. Chicago was covered by about a mile of ice. New York City was covered. I don't think it was a full mile of ice, but New York City was covered. Actually, the ice extended out to Long Island, and when it retreated, all of the debris that fell off of the ice sheet is what created Long Island. So I guess Joe, who called earlier from Long Island, he's living on a pile of glacial debris, probably. But anyway, it's just the difference. The difference between a little ice age and a huge one is the difference between there's a massive difference between the amount of ice that accumulates.
After all these years, you still haven't told me the name of the city on the cover of Not by Fire but by Ice, the graphic sketch that you have there of that city.
That is, a lot of people think that is supposed to be New York.
I'm going to guess Chicago.
But I had one person who called. I was on with you a different time, and somebody called. He was a geologist who called from New York, and he said, "If that is New York, the ice is not deep enough because the ice."
I remember that.
Deeper.
Yeah.
I hired an artist to just draw what I had in mind. So it's not any particular city.
How could you get 2 miles of ice?
Two miles.
It just never melts, I guess, huh?
No, it never melts, and that you get it because of the oceans. That's where you get it. That's where the water comes from to create that ice is from the oceans. So that is why people are so shocked to find out that sea levels were, 400 feet lower then than they are now.
Let's go next to Jersey Doug. Where? In New Jersey. Hey, Doug, go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. How's everything?
Okay. Thank you, Doug.
I'm glad to hear that. You were talking about the climate change and whatnot, and I wanted to bring up something. I don't know. I've had a few people mention this to me for years. I'm up there in the 50s, you could say, in my past my mid-50s. But anyway, I've been walking. I'm on my third dog now. We've been walking the same 3-mile route every day, summer, winter, spring, fall. And along the way, there's 8 or 10 different mulberry trees. For some reason, this is the first year ever that none of them have ever bloomed. Not one mulberry. The missus used to give me a hard time for coming in the house with the mulberry stains on the bottom of my shoes and dragging it in. Not one mulberry had formed on any of these trees. It's not like a clump of them. They're in quite a distance apart along the walk. And We also, if you know New Jersey, it's known for two things, Jersey Doug and Jersey tomatoes. And for whatever reason, Jersey tomatoes this year, everybody grows them. They come out the size of softballs. We were getting these little ping pong balls that were coming out, and that wasn't going on until the middle of July. We had the most beautiful weather for tomatoes. We had the sun, the rain, everything. The temperature was beautiful. Never got a crop. And other people that I've spoke to, they were, you know, if you've got three feet of square dirt in your backyard and you don't grow tomatoes in Jersey, you're looked down upon. You know what I mean? And everybody who grown this said the same thing. Couldn't get any decent tomatoes this year.
That's weird.
Now, another thing, it used to be I'd walk my dog, whether it's across the ball field or behind the church lot. Every 10 steps you took, you would 15 or 20 grasshoppers would take off. Some places call them locusts, flying grasshoppers. In the last 2 years, I don't think I've seen a single one of them.
That's weird. What's going on, Robert?
Wow.
The disappearing insects, changes in the vegetables.
I know that I'm in Texas, and the neighbors were telling me what good tomatoes you get here. And they were telling me, they just get more. They have to give them to all the neighbors. So I planted tomato plants this year, and my neighbors who told me how wonderful they would be, they planted theirs. And neither one of us has got decent tomatoes. I am not a gardener. I wish I were. I can't answer that.
It's COVID. It's doing it to everything.
There you go. COVID-19, yes.
It's frightening. Let's take another call or two. Who's up next? It is Eric in San Antonio, Texas. Eric, go ahead, sir.
Hello. I had two quick little fun questions. If an ice age happens in my lifetime, where should I move to? Where do I want to live? I already live in San Antonio, Texas, but maybe I can go down to Mexico. I don't know. And then my second fun little quick question is, what do you think about the ancient underwater cities from our previous ice age? You know, during the previous ice age, there must have been so many underwater cities that are now underwater.
Oh, yeah. We talked a few about those, yep. Robert, already,
well,
haven't we?
Eric, you probably didn't hear earlier, but I used to live in the Seattle area, and I have moved to Texas. So the fact that you live in San Antonio, I think you just stay right there. You're going to be in a good place.
You're in the right spot.
As near as I can tell, this part of Texas is going to get a little bit more rain, and the temperatures won't be a whole lot different than they have been. It'll just be a little bit rainier, if that's based, I base that on what has happened before. But again, it depends on which part of Texas you live in, because there's so many microclimates in the state. But to me, San Antonio would be fine. Now, what was the second part of your question? I forget.
No, you already answered it.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Right at the start.
Then we're covered. Yeah, because underwater cities, or the cities that are now underwater, yes, with sea levels 400 feet lower, there had to have been a lot of them that are now covered with sediment and debris, and we'll never know they're there.
What do you think of the coastal cities today? Are they in trouble?
No, you hear about all of the, they're going to have the water inundate them. No, I think it's going to be actually the worst, different. And you'll end up having, now this is not going to happen in our lifetimes, but you're going to end up having wharfs that are far above the water as the water levels drop, which is inevitable. It has to happen.
It has to happen indeed. Robert, we're almost out of time. Would you give out your website, sir?
Okay, we're talking about iceagenow.info and magneticreversals.com. It's also evolutionaryleaps.com, but that was kind of hard for people to remember, so I also bought magneticreversals.com, the same website.
All right, my friend. Be well, Robert. Talk to you next time, okay?
Thank you, George.
Robert Felix, not by fire, but by ice. Up next, Seth Shostak joins us from SETI as we talk about the possibility of life on Venus. not intelligent life, I don't think, but life nonetheless. And, of course, we will be talking about what else SETI is up to when we come back.